Okie dokie, folks. We got a very short FCCLV business meeting and elections, and then we will hand the mic over to our invited guest speaker, Dr. Francisco Richardson, who we are so appreciative of him being here, even though we're running super late. Call the meeting to order. We are going to take first attendance for our executive committee, and I'll just run through that. Sharon, don't worry about it. President Mikey Wiseman, Vice President Janice is here. Treasurer Sally Benjamin, she's here. Recording Secretary Sharon Youngs is here. Do you want to go ahead and read them, Sharon?
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
These minutes are from May 17th, 2025. There was no real business meeting. President Mikey asked that the minutes of last year's meeting be read. No treasurer's report was available. After an informative talk about the FCB Activities Committee by Greg Lindberg and Cache Wells, the meeting was adjourned. Respectfully submitted, Sharon Youngs, Secretary.
Perfect. We have a motion to accept from Paul and a second from Cassandra. Any discussion, edits, or corrections? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Wonderful. Thank you, Sharon. We do have a treasurer's report. Thank you very much. And Ms. Sally will provide that for the record.
This treasurer's report is from April 1st through April 30th, 2026. And we had a beginning balance of $3,850.04, and our ending balance was $3,850.04. There was no activity during the month of April.
So, folks, that's our operating expense. We do have allocated funds in a secure put-away fund, and we did incur some expenses here at convention, as well as some of the auction items that we provided for LVA, which is Low Vision Alliance. For those of you who don't know, the national organization formerly known as CCLVI, Council of Citizens with Low Vision, has recently changed their name to Low Vision Alliance. We are still an affiliate, and it does not affect our name. And we are probably not going to be exploring, well, at least I'm not the president anymore after this, but y'all can figure it out. But it's a lot of paperwork to change your name. I'm just saying. Next up on the agenda is the presentation of the nominating slate by Mr. Paul Lewis.
Here's the nominating report. This is the slate of officers that we've come up with for President Cassandra Jesse, for First Vice President Cache Wells. Second is open. Secretary was a young lady from
Janie
Jacksonville.
Struhart.
Yes. And treasurer was Sally Benjamin, and membership secretary is open.
Okay. All right.
And that is the slate of officers that we have for this election.
We did check, and I can actually proceed, since I am not on the slate or running, because I am termed out, folks. I need a motion to accept the nominating committee report as presented. Cassandra, Sally seconds. Any discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Wonderful. Now we can get started. Top down or bottom up?
Mikey, how are you going to handle the voting on Zoom? You're going to do it separately from do the in-room and then do the Zoom, and I can count hands?
Yeah. Do we have a lot of participants on
you
Zoom?
You have eight. You just have eight.
Eight? Okay. Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
It varies between 8 and 11.
Do you mind reading me the names of the participants on Zoom just to
of
make sure
not.
They're members?
Sure. Okay. You have Sharon. You have Janice. Mm-hmm. Bruce Hildebrandt. Cache. Pat Young, Jeanne, I don't know.
That's Jeannie. Jeannie
okay.
Struhar.
Okay. John Harden, Linda Sinsarian, and that's it. And then, of course, you have on the panelist side, Doug Hall, I believe. Let's see if he's still there. Give me a second.
So we will be counting everybody except Doug, Linda, and what was the other name you
John
said?
John Harden.
And John Hardy. Correct. Can you handle that for me?
You're not counting Doug Hall. You're not counting John Harding, and you're not counting Linda.
That is correct.
Yes, sir. I will make sure.
Wonderful. So, folks, even though there has been a slate provided, you are open to nominate or run from the floor. We're going to start with the position of president. The slate has presented Cassandra Jesse. Do we have any nominations from the floor? Any nominations from the floor going twice? Any nominations from the floor going thrice? We have a motion from the floor from Paul Lewis that nominations be closed and that Cassandra be elected president by acclamation. Do we have a second?
Second.
Who is that?
Tony.
We have a second from Tony. Wonderful. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the ayes have it. Congratulations, Miss Jesse. For first vice president, the slate is presenting Cache Wells. Any nominations from the floor? We have a nomination for Ricardo Salazar from Cassandra Jesse. Do we have a second? Sally, okay. Wonderful. Ricardo Salazar has been nominated. Do we have any other nominations from the floor? Ricardo Salazar, you've been nominated from the floor for first vice president of Florida Council of Citizens with Low Vision. Do you accept the nomination? He does, folks. Good time. Hey, that speaks volumes about that timing, folks. Okay, so any other nominations from the floor going once? Any other nominations from the floor going twice? Any other nominations from the floor going thrice? Cassandra moves that nominations be closed. Sally seconded. Folks, we got to vote now. So if... Do we have somebody, a runner in here that can count? Any of my volunteers?
And for folks on Zoom, for the person on the phone, it's *9 to raise your hand and... It's option Y on a Mac or alt Y on a PC to raise your hand.
The doctor's going to count hands, folks. He normally counts fingers and toes when people are just born, but now he's going to count hands, okay?
I'm not good at math, though.
Oh, that's okay. That's reassuring, doctor. That's very reassuring. Nothing you want to hear better from a doctor's mouth than I'm not good at math. So... Is Cache Wells in the room?
She's on Zoom.
She's on Zoom.
She's here on Zoom.
So, Ricardo, if you don't mind stepping out of the room so that we could do the vote, and then we'll get you, I promise you. Yeah, just take a step out. Okay, so we will take Cache Wells first because she was on the nominating slate. For Cache Wells, please raise your hand. If you're on Zoom, it's *9 to raise your hand.
*9, option Y if you're using a Mac, or alt Y if you're using a PC. Let me know when you want the number, Mikey.
I'm ready for the numbers on Zoom.
Three.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have 4 in the room. That's 7. All those in favor of Ricardo Salazar for first vice president, please raise your hand. What do I have on Zoom?
Just 1.
We have a total of 7. We have a tie. Oh, that is true. That is true. Okay, let me check. 1 second. This is what we call transparency in voting. If American elections were done this way, we wouldn't have so many problems, folks. Ricardo, you're a member. You get to vote. Do you want to vote for cachet or for yourself? Okay. You can come back in, Ricardo. That brings the total to 8. Ricardo Salazar is our new vice president, folks. Congratulations, Ricardo. At this time, we have nobody put forth for the second vice president position. We have a nomination for the floor for Sharon Youngs by Cassandra Jesse. Do we have a second?
Yes, I'll second.
Sally seconds. Any other nominations from the floor going once? Any other nominations from the floor going twice? Any other nominations from the floor going thrice? Cassandra moves nominations be closed and that Sharon Young be elected second vice president by acclamation. Tony seconds. Any discussion? Congratulations, Sharon. You're second vice president. Secretary is up and the slate presents Jeannie's True Heart. Do we have any nominations from the floor? Any nominations from the floor going twice? Any nominations from the floor going thrice? Paul Lewis moves that nominations be closed and that Jeannie's True Heart be elected by acclamation. Do we have a second? You're not a member, Mom. Tony seconds. Thank you. Any discussion? Congratulations, Jeannie's True Heart. You are now the secretary. Next up is Treasurer Sally Benjamin is presented by the slate. Do we have any nominations from the floor? Any nominations from the floor going twice for Treasurer? Any nominations going thrice from the floor for Treasurer? Hearing none. Paul Lewis moves that nominations be closed and that Sally Benjamin be Treasurer by acclamation. Do we have a second? Thank you so much. Any discussion? We're going to call it. Congratulations, Sally Benjamin. You remain the treasurer. Thank you. Membership secretary. We have Paul Lewis, right? No, we have nobody on the slate. So do we have any nominations from the floor?
I nominate Sally Benjamin.
You nominate Sally Benjamin. Okay. So we did get a clarification in our constitution. The treasurer and the membership secretary can be the same person. Any other nominations from the floor? Going twice. Any other nominations from the floor going thrice? Hearing none. Cassandra moves that nominations be closed and Sally Benjamin be membership secretary by acclamation. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second, Tony. Any discussion? Congratulations. I would also like to appoint Mikey Wiseman as immediate past president of FCCLP. Folks, that concludes the business portion of our meeting. And I know that there's a lot of guests in here for Dr. Francisco Richardson. I want to thank him for his patience because... We lost the control of the agenda today. But folks on Zoom, we have not forgotten you. Our guest speaker is here, Dr. Francisco Richardson. This is his second time with us, backed by popular demand and all his wonderful information direct from Eyes of Winter Park and the proud inventor of the Sight Stand, which is a great magnifier. Hopefully he'll tell you about it. He does love questions, but let me hand the mic over to him and let's be mindful of his time. Mr. Richardson. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. I do have like 3 or 4 slides. They're not necessary. I just thought if you're able to kind of see those, then it's really just a picture of my family up on the screen and my bio. So I'm the proud father of 2 daughters, and me and my lovely wife are happy to live our lives together. But I wanted to thank you for inviting me to, what is it, the 73rd? Is that correct? Fantastic. It is an honor and a pleasure to speak to all of you. I was kind of asked to speak about macular degeneration that may happen later in life. I know a lot of patients have the question about having already having inherited retinal diseases, but are they still going to be candidates for maybe getting macular degeneration later in life? And so that's what the talk is going to be about. First, I'd like to start with some trivia. I call it the I know, right? E-Y-E, I know, okay? So the first question, let's see if anybody can hit me on this. How many working parts does the human eye have? Anybody. Approximately 2 million.
What?
The eye is very complex and precise, all right? So 2 million working parts. Now here's a true and false. Does the retina or the heart muscle use up more oxygen? The retina is correct. Of course, we're talking about the eyes, right? So yes, believe it or not, the human retina consumes more oxygen than your heart muscle does. Next one, how many colors can your eyes identify? Any guesses? Approximately 10 million colors. Okay, our eyes are very sophisticated. Here's one that some of you may know. How many eye muscles actually move the eye? There's 6 muscles that move the eye. One moves up, one moves down, one moves left, one moves right, and then one circles one way and one circles the other. So there's 6 muscles. What percentage of the brain is involved in processing vision? About 40%, almost half of your brain is required for vision. So again, what I'm trying to do with these questions is share the importance of our vision. Not that you don't know, but just sharing it with information. One last question before we kind of get started. What is the fastest moving muscle in the human body? It's the blinking one, the one that closes your eye. It's called the orbicularis oculi. To protect the eyes from any danger, the eyes are the fastest, or the blinking muscle. So now that those are out of the way, I wanted to kind of chat with you again about my talk today. First, I wanted to get some information. Does anybody know what the word retina in Latin, all right? It comes from the word rete. Rete meaning net. Net. So it's the net that captures information so that your brain can process it. So when we talk about the retina, I want you to think of it receives information so that the brain is the one that actually makes the vision happen. So the premise for those of us living with inherited retinal disorders, you have already spent years adapting to specific unique visual baselines. What impresses me the most about a lot of my patients, and all of you included, is how you've been able to adapt. You have improved contrast. You have enhanced memory. You have stronger audition. You can hear better. And then you have more sensitive spatial awareness. That's, you know, if I would ask somebody to use their white cane, they would trip and fall all over it. So you definitely have a lot of your other senses that get strengthened because your vision acuity is not as sharp as it is. This is called neuroplasticity. That is the ability of the brain to be able to adapt and make improvements so that we can live better lives. So remember that the retina is not really part of the eye. It is an extension of the brain. So the same tissue that makes up your brain makes up your retina. So it is an extension of the brain. And so the big picture here and what you need to know is that as the body ages, you're going to have secondary conditions enter the mix, right? So today we're looking at what happens when macular degeneration develops on top of existing inherited retinal dystrophies. The goal for me is that we will unpack how these conditions interact, how to spot the differences, and how to protect your independence if and when these things happen. I've added a second slide now, and this one is just a quick picture of the back of the eye. And the back of the eye is a beautiful thing. There's the entire retina. Then you've got a structure that kind of looks like the sun. That's the optic nerve. And out of the optic nerve come these big blood vessels that supply some of the blood supply to the retina. And underneath of it, I also have a slide of what's called an OCT. An OCT is one of the main diagnostic tools that we use. It uses light to take a picture of the back of the eye, the retina, and it actually shows me all 10 different layers of the retina so that if there's a problem, we can actually identify where on that retina these problems are happening. So how many of you were told 20 or 30 years ago, well, there's nothing we can do for you. I'm so sorry. How many of you? Yeah, one or two of you. Pretty much all of you. But that's no longer a true statement. We have many, many advances, especially through genetic testing to help identify which gene caused the problem. And now through incredible research, we can try to combat that. And then, of course, my piece, which is the low vision rehabilitation to help you with functional and living your life to the max to improve your lifestyle. This is a significant point in history because you're pretty much the first generation that has all these advances available. So with all these new technologies and all these genetic research now, there's even been the ability to fix one particular gene sequence. If you've heard of Luxturna, right, there's an actual series of injections that can reverse one particular form of retinitis pigmentosa. I think that's amazing. And so the reason that this is possible is because the eye is, it lends itself for these kind of things, and we'll talk about that in a moment. The inherited retinal dystrophies are a group of rare genetic-driven conditions that cause progressive structural changes for the retina. These conditions are not simply eye problems. They are neurological conditions. And unlike the age-related conditions like macular degeneration, these are caused by a specific gene mutation that, you know, occurs from birth. And although the symptoms may not appear until adulthood, these can sometimes also run in families, as you all very well know. So the target is the light-sensing cells, the photoreceptors, which are, again, part of the retina. Another area is the layer right below it called the retinal pigmented epithelium. And that one is responsible to remove any waste products. Since the ability to see it requires light, some of those cells are going to have a lot of waste products, and so that retinal pigmented epithelium is responsible to remove those. If those waste products accumulate, that's what we're talking about as far as what's called drusen. That's accumulation of waste products. It gets into that the way of our vision in the macular region. You can't see through it, and that's what the problem is in these cases. And then it generally affects you by having trouble with night vision, trouble with side vision, trouble with your central vision, and of course, it can be a combination of those. And it's often with a slow progression. So the common variations are going to be your retinitis pigmentosa, your Stargardt's, your cone dystrophies, and some of these others like that. So, what is macular degeneration? Macular degeneration is, again, the common condition tied to the natural aging process. So it has nothing to do with your genes. Genetic testing is not going to be very valuable. There are some factors that pop up on genetic testing, but some people who have those genetic expressions don't necessarily get the macular degeneration. So I like to kind of explain it like your normal senses. As you age, all of your senses get a little degraded. Your hearing is not as sharp. Your touch is not as sensitive. Your smell and your taste, everything gets kind of affected as you age in life. And so macular degeneration is the degradation of vision that happens with that aging. So what do we look out for, right? Basically, with macular degeneration, you're going to have a sudden distortion. You're going to have a rapid change in your ability to read. Things can get wavy, and lines or straight lines can become curved, and you can have some new dark spots. But the bottom line is, if you have any of these things happening, you need to go see your doctor as soon as possible so that we can take action and help you before it becomes a huge problem, all right? The most common form of the macular degeneration is going to be your dry form. Again, dry form is when those waste products accumulate at the bottom of a retina. The retina is not able to clear those out, and then that area becomes affected with its blood supply. And as you all very well know, if something doesn't have blood supply, it just kind of unfortunately dies away. And so that's what's happening in these cases of the dry form. And you've probably heard the term geographic atrophy. We always like to overcomplicate things in medicine, so that is the way we complicate medicine in this case. But geographic very simply means kind of like a map, and atrophy means thinning. So it's just an area of thinning at that back of the eye concentrated in that macular region. Now, if it becomes the wet form, which is about 15 to 20% of cases, then what's happening there is that the eye is developing new blood vessels. And we'd think that the body making new blood vessels would be a positive thing. But in this case, those blood vessels are not solid. They leak. And when those blood vessels leak, it separates the layers of the retina. That makes vision horrible. And so the next conversation here is how are they different? So macular degeneration and your inherited retinal diseases are different basically where it comes from. Again, we talked about how macular is an aging disease and the IRDs are from a genetic concern. And so the timing of onset is generally the biggest clue to tell us which one is which. With dystrophies, the IRDs are going to be slower. They're going to be earlier in life, like childhood to mid-adulthood, whereas the macular degeneration is going to be later in life, usually past 55 and mostly past 65 years of age. Many of the dystrophies affect the entire retina or start, you know, on the outer edges, whereas macular degeneration is completely constricted to that center part of your vision, leaving peripheral vision without effect. So can somebody have both? That's pretty much the bottom line of today. And the short answer is, unfortunately, yes. Having an inherited retinal disease does not grant immunity, and therefore some of my patients assume, well, I already have a retinal disease, so that's it. I don't have to worry about any other ones. But unfortunately, that's not the case. IRDs do not protect you from developing macular degeneration. Aging does not stop, and so I apologize for that. So then it becomes the dual burden, right? When macular degeneration enters the picture, now we've got two things going on at the same time. The system was already a little bit, you know, degenerated or weak, so now add a something else on top of that, it makes vision very, very difficult and complicated. And basically, there's going to be accelerated fatigue. The genetic dystrophy already stretches the capacity of the retina, and so when these drusen that we described pile up on the retina, they cut off the nourishment from the bottom up, and that causes that central vision to be very, very affected. So how do we test, or how do we treat? Testing, again, is going to be very simple. If you have the IRDs, it's going to be your genetic testing. That's going to tell us which of the 300-plus genes that we've been able to study now is going to be affected. Therefore, we can tell you what your diagnosis is. And based off of that, we can educate your family if it's a concern for when you have children and those kind of things. And lastly, if you're going to be interested in doing research or be involved in research, then you can already be on their database. And if anything pops up and it matches your gene expression, they can actually reach out to you directly. So I think that's what's critical about doing the genetic testing, those three options. Find out what you have, educate your family in case you want to have more children, and obviously be available for research. Unfortunately for macular degeneration, as I stated, the genetic testing is kind of worthless. There are some markers that help to tell us if there's risk factors, but they don't always express, so those aren't very important. And then how to manage the dry changes. Well, for dry macular degeneration and geographic atrophy, the management focuses mostly on lifestyle. The main thing that you can do, no smoking. Smoking is pretty much the worst thing that you can do for your body, unfortunately. That does include vaping. I'm sorry, guys. It's not me. All right? And so the idea is that if you want to protect yourself as best as possible, those are one of the two things that you can control the best, okay? There are some antioxidants that we can take, so that becomes the, I'm sure you've heard, AREDS. That stands for Age-Related Eye Disease Study. And that pretty much found that vitamins C, E, zinc, and then the two compounds lutein and zeaxanthin are the ones that are going to support my patients with macular degeneration. And there are also some new injections. With the wet kind, the main way to support and treat those patients is going to be with these intravitreal injections. They take a huge needle, they poke it into your eye, and basically they inject these compounds in there. And as I mentioned, the problem with wet is the formation of blood vessels. So what we're injecting into the eye is a medicine that prevents the formation of those leaky blood vessels so that wet gets held in place and doesn't continue to leak and get worse. So that's the whole point of these injections. There's no other way to get it into the eye, so we have to inject you. And then rehabilitation, that's where my main piece of this whole thing comes in. As a low-vision optometrist, it's not that I don't care about the anatomy or the biology of the eye, but I'm already counting on our retina specialists and our retina doctors, glaucoma doctors, to take care of the biology, the anatomy, to keep the eye as healthy as possible. My function is going to be to help you live your lives better. It's about function. Do we need you know, A&M? Do we need a white cane? Do we need magnification? Do we need spotting telescopes? Do we need wearable VR technology? Do you need the new Meta glasses, which I think are phenomenal? That's where I kind of come in. So your low vision specialist is going to be there to help you live your life more effectively, more functionally, stronger, especially if you're doing education or if you're in employment. That's where the vision is really, you know, very stressed out. So those are the areas that I really get into a lot. Luckily in Florida, we have a lot of resources that can help. We heard from the Division of Blind Services. That's an excellent organization. And if you're a student or if you're employed, they're going to really help to pay for a lot of these expensive things that we have. I have to apologize that a lot of the things that are done in the low vision space are incredibly expensive. And because there was waste and fraud in the past, Medicare decided to say that no lenses are available for reimbursement. And that's why a lot of these services and help devices are not covered by insurance. That is something that I hope to attack in the near future. Who knows how long that takes? It's government, not my fault. But I did speak with the new director there to see if I can partner with her and help that situation out. We also have the Braille and Talking Book Library. Luckily, again, you got a chance to speak with them. We have our local support centers. That's going to be your Lighthouse and the Center for the Blind. And then lastly, amazing organizations like one that we are at today, the Florida Council of the Blind and others that are here to support you in every way, whether it be fighting in D.C. for your rights, whether it be helping you to get employment for all those outstanding reasons, even to be together to talk about these difficulties that you're having in life. So I think organizations such as this one are very important to the future of supporting all you patients. And that's pretty much, I wanted to keep it simple. We could spend hours, days, weeks, and months talking about these. I can get very simple like we've done an overview. I can get very complicated and bore you to death. So I don't think I'm going to do that. So the last thing I want to do is I'm going to ask and answer a few of the most common questions that I hear, and then I'll open it up for you guys to ask me anything you'd like because I'm sure you have some questions. But the first one is, if I already have an IRD, should I worry about macular degeneration? The answer is no, you don't have to worry. If it comes, it comes. We'll deal with it together. Be aware, especially after age 80, but it's not something that you need to worry about. We'll just deal with it if and when it comes to happen. Will vitamins help my IRD? Unfortunately, generally no. Vitamins are going to help the macular degeneration cases. There are some studies about vitamin E, etc., with our RP cases, but in general, vitamins do not really support my IRD patients. If my vision suddenly changes, what should I do? Well, although I'd love to take you on and help you out in every way I can, if there's actual changes with the eye, I'm going to default back to the retina doctor. Your retina specialist is the one who's going to help you if anything is fluctuating or changing. Again, you can come to my office and I'll give you a good hug and a kiss and we'll take care of it and look at it. But I'm going to have to send it to our retina specialist. So if there's a change, go see them first. Once you've seen them and everything is stable, then you come back to me, and again, we go functional. Should my children get genetic testing? If you have a confirmed IRD, it might be helpful, especially for that family planning. So yes. Unfortunately, you would have to pay for that genetic testing unless your children are experiencing some changes in their vision. If they have a diagnosis, then the genetic testing is covered for free. But if it's not, then it would be out of pocket, but still might be helpful to make those decisions. And the most important questions, are these eye injections painful? The answer is no. They're not really painful. They use a topical anesthetic to numb the eye. The white part of the eye doesn't really have nerves, so they can stick that area, pull the injection out. And although it sounds cringy and we're all going like that, it doesn't actually affect you in any kind of a way. Okay, so that's the good news about that. That's pretty much my piece. I'd like to open up the floor for any questions, if there aren't any, and then I'll finish up with some closing thoughts. Do we need to pass them a microphone, or do we? No, go ahead, please. Go ahead, please. I will repeat the question, if that's okay. Yeah.
That would be fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. The question was, since you can have more than one retinal condition, how do you go about treating the different conditions? Well, I mean, that's what's great about the new technology with the testing devices. Since we can actually visualize which layer of the retina is being affected, then you would treat depending according to what each condition is. But I would kind of say the same thing. You know, if your toe is broken, but so is your ankle, they're both on the foot, and you would treat them both independently. So I would kind of say that the same thing is for the retina. If we have macular degeneration, we attack that. If you have some IRDs, we take that into account. If you have a retinal detachment, we would take that on. So you would just treat it depending on what's actually the problem and treat it that way.
I was concerned with the two that I mentioned. With the macular degeneration, you lose your central vision. With retinopathy, you lose your peripheral and depth perception.
Right.
And if you had both of those, which I've never heard of, I was just curious about it.
No, it's yeah.
How you would treat that.
So again, if you have an IRD that affects more your peripheral vision, and unfortunately then you get macular degeneration affecting the center part of your vision, that is absolutely possible. That's kind of what I was saying, that this is a unique generation. We're living longer. Our patients are experiencing both of these things at the same time. It is definitely possible. And you would, again, treat them independently. Unfortunately, you would have the IRD affecting the periphery, and you would have that macular treating or affecting centrally, so we would have to address both areas independently, the same way that we discussed. If it's the dry kind, using the AREDS vitamins, changing lifestyle, etc. If it's the wet kind, then we have these injections. And again, the dry kind has injections as well if it gets to a certain moderate level or severe. Good question. Any others? Got one over here.
Dr. Richardson, thank you for being here. A comment and a question, if I may.
Of course.
The comment, I'm really glad to hear your intention to advocate against the exclusion of the lens from CMS. That's something that many of us advocates have been trying to advocate against, an ACB, of which FCB is obviously an affiliate, and also the Alliance on Aging and Visual Loss, another affiliate, are very involved in trying to advocate against that, because it's really a crime, especially for people who are older, who are losing their vision, and could maintain
budget.
Their independence with some low vision devices that you know, if you need a support cane, if you need a walker, if you need a wheelchair, there's absolutely no problem. You get it from Medicare. But if you need a low vision device that's going to enable you to stay at home independently, you can't, or at least Medicare will not pay for it.
That's right.
So that's my soapbox. My question is, I wonder if you could tell me, talk a little bit about the fact that there's always been a schism between the eye care community and the vision rehab, the traditional rehabilitation services. And not a schism coming from malice, but often from ignorance. And so people that are diagnosed with vision loss, especially in older age, by the ophthalmologist, often are not referred to available resources, and they think, well, this is just the way it is. I'm getting older. I can see as well. So, and they begin to become more dependent. And I'm wondering, what do you see as the role of the low vision optometrist in trying to bridge that gap?
Wow. Thank you for that question. That's exactly what I do. To speak a little bit back about the Medicare thing, I'll give you an example. My grandmother required 3 power chairs at $20,000 each, and she never used one of them. My patients only need $1,000-$3,000 worth of gear, and Medicare won't cover it. So I agree with you that doesn't make sense. Sure, put in some checks and balances and make sure there's no fraud or illegitimate recommendations, but it is a travesty that such affordable in the scheme of the game, right? A surgery is $10,000-$15,000. A power chair is $15,000-$20,000. So in the scheme of Medicare, a $1,800, $2,500 devices is not very significant. So I agree with you. About your question, it's very important. It's actually the reason I got into it. I got tired of telling my patients, there's nothing else I have for you. Have a nice day. And I'm an empathetic guy. I love my patients. The reason I got into medicine is because I want to help people, not because I want to be profitable or make money. We all work in order to make a living, etc. But I feel that what's happening is that, joking, basically in school, they said low vision is really called slow vision, right? Our patients are generally older. It takes a lot of effort. The exams require 40 minutes or an hour. They're in a wheelchair. They're coming in. So agreed that there's probably not sufficient providers, number one, is one of the main problems. Number two, as far as having those the rehabilitation side linked in with the optometrist, it becomes a budget thing, right? Unless you have a very large, low-vision kind of a clinic practice type of thing, then it's very difficult for the doctor to hire some of these high-quality vision rehab persons. So then even myself as a low-vision doctor, I really more concentrate on the prescription side of things, on the education, on the exposure kind of things. And then I have to kind of default to one of these rehab professionals, whether it be Lighthouse or whether it be Division of Blind Services, to do some of the training, day-to-day life kind of things. And so I agree that there's a disconnect there. And I would say that the same disconnect applies from my level to the ophthalmologist level, where exactly like you described, the retina doctor says, hey, I got nothing for you. Your vision is not very good and there's nothing that can be done. And the conversation ends there. And I think, again, it's not necessarily the retina doctor's fault, although it is, but it's not. They see 60 to 70 patients in a day. They're not going to spend 15, 20 minutes with you because they don't have that time. And so it is at that point, and it's one of the things that I'm going to be working on as well. Again, I feel the kind of the need to take my game to another level. And that's what I hope to achieve is stop being more of a localized Central Florida kind of a provider and try to achieve more improvement in quality of life for you at the whole national level, where we go and fight about these things that they just don't make sense. I really think that retina doctors should be forced. It should be a standard of care practice. When they say they have nothing else for you, that means now you are required to go see a low vision optometrist in order for that to happen. I got a question back there with Mikey. But so I think that there is a very apparent disconnect in all three levels, from the ophthalmologist to me as the optometrist, down to the rehabilitation specialist, occupational therapist. So all right. Thank you for that question.
Okay, I have a question. Is macular degeneration, is it painful? Like somebody that might have just like movement, hand movement in their eye or light perception, and that's all they have in that eye. And I mean, macular degeneration wouldn't do anything for it unless it's painful.
Luckily, any changes to the retina have absolutely no sensation. So it will, unfortunately, take a lot of your functional vision away. It takes mostly the center part of your vision away, but there is no pain or sensation that goes with it. Most of the pain that we experience with our eyes is going to be the front surface, the cornea, the clear surface of the eye. And again, I think that's because the body wants to protect, so that if something's happening to that center part of the front part of the eye, that's where you're going to have the pain from dry eyes, from any scratches or injuries, something gets into your eye, that's what you're feeling. But luckily, there are no nerve supplies to the retina, so if and when there's damages or changes to the retina, there is not an actual sensation, feeling, nothing like this. Now, there is also the Charles Bonnet. Does anybody here experience Charles Bonnet? Does everybody know what Charles Bonnet is? Where when vision is impaired past a certain degree, some of my patients were actually going to have, I don't like to use the word visions, but they'll have things that are not there in their vision. And the way I kind of describe it is that it's definitely not dementia, okay? It's basically the power of the brain trying to fill in gaps. I've had patients tell me they see caricatures like cartoons. I've had people tell me they see kind of like a cyclone fence, a pattern. I've had patients tell me they can see people that are not there. It's generally not a grotesque, scary kind of a situation, although some patients have told me that they experience it that way. But the majority of patients, it's just, it's almost like watching television. It's almost just like an image that you're seeing that doesn't affect you in any way. And that's really the main way we know it's not a maniac kind of a thing. With mania, these things affect you. They interact with you. They make you feel bad. And these are almost like watching television. It just happens. And since we're on the subject, the way you kind of manage those is what I call change the game. If it's dark, add some music. If it's dark, put some light on. If you're sitting still, go move around. So change it up. Whatever you need to do to change things up, and that generally snaps the brain back out of those fun visions.
Well, you reminded me of something I experienced that before I went total. But my question to you, I want to go back to what you were talking about earlier, to bridging the gap, and a lot of it. It's hard for a person to make an assessment on how much or what degree of vision a person with low vision has, just sight on scene or right on, you know.
For sure.
So what is it that can be done? We in the are those in the low vision community or those just in the blindness community at large? What can we do to sort of kind of bridge the gap, and how can we go about educating others to that fact? You know, because I know it's kind of hard. It's hard enough for me being total, but it's got to be super hard for those that are with low vision, because you know, you get the aspect of, oh, he or she's not really blind. You're really curious. What are they doing carrying that cane, faking like they're blind? But, you know, you just don't know. So what is it that we as a group or as a segment of people can do to help to educate and,
sure,
bridge that gap? Thank you for taking my question.
Of course. One of the things that has always been interesting to me is the fact that when you have vision impairment, generally people can't tell. So, for example, I'll go to shake a patient's hand and they don't shake my hand. It's not for me to be offended, right? They couldn't see it. And so I know exactly what you're describing. I will say that part of it is because most people don't really experience or live or know someone with true vision impairment. I kind of ask my regular patients, how many people do you know that are blind? How many people do you know that are vision impaired? And most of them say none. They don't really know someone. Like, how many people do you know that only have one eye, right, that use a prosthetic? I know that there's a prosthetic in the back, but most people would probably say, I don't know anybody that doesn't have, you know, one eye. So unfortunately, it is a little bit of a rare situation. You know, we have over 350 million Americans, and really only about 10 or 15 million Americans are, you know, truly vision impaired and blind. So it's just not a large community, and that's probably why it doesn't have the respect that it deserves, okay? How do we actually communicate a little better? I would challenge all of you to educate everybody in your circle, people you live with, people that are your friends, your family. I'm always shocked about, you know, family members. One of the tests that I do is facial recognition. I'll get in front of my patient at 3 feet, and I'll say, can you recognize my face? They say no, and their family member sitting next to them goes, really? You can't see his face, and he's 3 feet away from you? And this person lives with that patient. So I will tell you that a lot of it is, I hate to put the ball back in your court, right, but it's a lot of it is going to be on you to educate these other Americans on what you're actually living through. Just because you appear normal doesn't mean you see the way they expect you to see. And I like the white cane for that purpose. Remember that it's not just for mobility, it's also for identification. I tell my patients all the time, you walk into Publix without your cane, nobody cares. The moment you walk into Publix and you have a white cane, somebody is going to come and say, hi, sir, ma'am, I'm happy to help you today, huh? What can I do for you? So part of it is also, again, not to put the ball in your court, but a lot of it is going to be me, and a lot of it is going to be you as the patient to really push this education. And lastly, you're right here. The associations, or, you know, like the Council for the Blind, the Federation Finding Blindness, all these organizations that are going to be fighting on your behalf to get these things that I'm trying to accomplish. But you know, even Division of Blind Services doesn't have a lot of support unless you're being educated education or work. And if you're not in those two categories, which a lot of my seniors are not, they're very limited on what they can provide. And that's yet again something I think is a travesty. What I'd like to say is the level of emotional anxiety and depression that I see in your community with vision impairment is scary, right? If you've lived your whole life, if you've had IRD, you've had it your whole life. But if you got vision impairment later in life, and now things that you could do before, driving, reading books, things like this, and all of a sudden you can't do that, you kind of think that your retirement age is to be able to live a fun life, and that has been kind of taken away from you, and then there's no resources, and you haven't adapted because you haven't had it for a long time. So the level of depression that I see is horrendous, and that's why I like to come to these meetings, because I see a group of people who are taking care of each other, who are trying to do the best for one another, who are trying, again, to fight for your rights and your benefits, which we all deserve as human beings. You know, I really empathize with all of you. I really do. I have, you know, again, I cannot relate. I have perfect vision, but if, you know, and as a soldier, I was a military veteran. I went to 3 tours of combat. If I didn't have vision, I would not have been able to achieve and accomplish some of these things that have been so fulfilling in my life. So I empathize very highly with you. And I want you to also have a little bit of patience with these normal-sighted people, okay? Because they just don't get it. They don't get it. I have family members put patches on in my office for 10 or 15 minutes while we're doing the test. And when they take those off, they're like, oh, thank God. And I said, you see, that's exactly the point. So again, I empathize with you very highly. You're doing something that's very difficult. You're doing it gracefully, and I challenge you to do the best we can and lean on those that are going to support you in every way. I see such love and affection, people holding hands and helping each other. This is what it takes, and I think that should be across even all normal people, whether they have vision impairment or any other disability. I think one of the things that we're missing in this country is that, you know, here's another thing I ask my patients. How many doors down do you know your neighbor? When I grew up in Puerto Rico, we had block parties, and all the people in that street knew each other by name. We had potlucks and things like that. In my neighborhood now, I don't even know 2 doors down, me personally. So I'm part of the problem myself, but I think that this is one of the things that America is really struggling on, even though we're getting off topic a little bit. So thank you for that question.
I have a question and then a quasi-proposal. My first question is, what are your thoughts and what have been your experience and what do you recommend with some of like the newer eyewear, like the Ray-Ban Metas, for example?
Amazing.
Has it been very difficult to change the lenses to a prescription lens, or any guidance on that for those of us that do wear corrective lenses?
You know what happens with that is that the way that Ray-Ban has done it is that they are forcing us to send the prescriptions to them. In other words, they want to capture the sale of the frame and they want to capture the sale of the lenses. So they're trying to step onto my toes as an optometrist. I've gotten around that by just charging an extra warranty, unfortunately. So if you need some Ray-Bans with prescription, come up here and get a card. I unfortunately have to tell you it's going to be expensive, okay? You're going to pay $1,000 for the lenses. So that puts your glasses with prescription right about $1,400-$1,500, but you can get the prescription that you need and take advantage of these Ray-Ban Metas. So I apologize, but that's the only way that I've been able to get around that. If any shop puts lenses in your Ray-Ban Metas, the warranty automatically is gone. We are not allowed to change the lenses on those Ray-Bans. So again, what I have done is I have just charged extra to include a warranty for you. And if that happens for whatever reason, then I just purchase another one for you. We're not using Ray-Ban. It's just me taking care of it in my office. So yet again, I apologize it's expensive, but there are other providers like me doing the same game. So just expect a lot more expensive of a pair of glasses.
Do you recommend it, though?
Highly.
Highly.
I think that the Ray-Ban Metas, as they continue to mature and get better, are just going to change the game. I'll give you a few examples. You want to do the Be My Eyes? It has video cameras. So when you can call now your family member or someone that's on your speed dial, and they're looking through what you're looking through your glasses. Another example, and it's my favorite, is because you're using artificial intelligence, you can actually talk to the document that you're trying to read. It's not just a text-to-speech kind of a situation where it reads everything top to bottom, left to right. No. So for example, if I take a newspaper, I open up the full to two pages, it'll take a picture, and then I can ask it questions. All right, Meta, just read the headlines, and it'll read only the headlines. And then when you listen to the one you want to hear, you say, well, read me that article only. So you can interact with the actual text. I'll give you another example. You see a menu from a restaurant. Let's say you want a burger. You can take a picture of that menu and ask it, hey, what are my burger options? And it will only read the burger options. So I think that by being able to talk to the document, that's going to take things to the next level. So I am a huge fan of the Ray-Ban Metas. I was just talking to Miss Lisa out there from one of the companies that Florida sells Reading devices. And she says that you can tie your WeWalk cane and you can tie all these other technologies because they're just Bluetooth glasses. Mm-hmm. So if you're able to link Bluetooth to any of these devices, now your WeWalk talks to you through the glasses. You don't have to pull your phone out of your pocket and answer phone calls. So no, I think as they get more sophisticated, it'll do amazing things. You may not even know it. They also do audio augmentation, like a pseudo hearing aids. The Meta glasses has a feature in there to augment sound and hearing. So it even has like, you know, pseudo hearing aids for you.
Cool.
So I am a huge fan of the Metas. I think they're changing the game, and they're affordable.
They're affordable, yeah, because I have the Envisions, and you worry about just wearing them.
That's right.
So my proposal to you, and I believe, and when, you know, you touched on it in your speech, you said, God, I don't know how long it takes. It takes a long time with the government.
No, I know it.
So as Inicio mentioned, ACB, our parent organization, the national organization, we actually do a pilgrimage up to D.C. every year. Normally it happens late February or early March. I can't quite fully invite you and give you a proper invitation unless I go through the whole motions. But
I just mean tell me when it is and
I'll
go.
If you want to join our team, I think Florida Council of the Blind would be very proud to include you in our visit up to D.C. and our day out on the Hill. And one of the things that we've been advocating for years – thank you, guys. One of the things that we have been advocating for literally years – has been with CMS getting them to rewrite that stupid lens prohibition. We have gone up there with assistive magnification. We have shown them all the tools that are inadvertently disqualified. But, you know, the more the merrier, and we know it takes a while. That's why we keep going. We haven't given up. So if you are serious about getting your feet wet and want to go in a structured environment, we would be glad to bring you up and let you know when it is. And you obviously have my contact information.
I'm very interested in that. But I will also say that I personally don't have a lot of clout either. You know, optometrists don't have as much clout as you think I have. And it's going to be for me to get some retina doctors involved. This is a big undertaking. I'm not trying to wimp out on you. I'm just trying to be straight and honest with you that, you know, I think it takes many voices. That's your piece. It takes a lot of professionals. That's my piece. And then it takes a lot of these surgeons to actually say, hey, that crap is actually important. So it's going to be a tri-level kind of fit on this one.
Well, how great would it be for you to have that firsthand experience when you talk to your colleagues that you have gone up with us? And I will tell you what is the most clout you have when we go up to visit, because we kind of stay in our state. So you are still a constituent. And you do have a vote. And the constituent and voting member of the community actually opens more door than any degree or anything we bring forth. They do always carve out time, but, you know, we can definitely follow up. We'll put a pin in it. It'll be March of next year. And I'm sure the folks at ACB, I don't know if I have anybody on Zoom listening, would be great to have you up there, and we can start a little thread going, doctor, and we'll make that happen for you.
I'll be very honest with you. Initially, I thought, hey, Let me go to the optometry schools. Let me get more optometrists. Let me have more providers of these low vision services. But I'm actually in the process of developing this one of these AI platforms, and my goal is to put it at the retina doctor's offices, at their front desk, and each patient can literally just scan my QR code and have the vast majority of low vision services right from the comfort of their home. Because I accept also that the transportation is a huge piece. Florida has the suckiest transportation. I mean, if you live in Boston or New York, you have options. But if you live in Florida, you're stuck. And here recently, we do have Uber and Lyft and these things. But then again, it becomes a cost prohibitive kind of a problem. But I would also, again, tell you that that's where you reach out to your support network. I promise you, you're not a burden to your friends and your family, although you might feel that way sometimes. You cannot be afraid to ask for help. My mother always told me, asking for help is maturity. It's not weakness. You have to know that when you ask these people, it's because you need their help. You're not trying to be a pain in their rear derriere, right? You need some support and some help. And they have to understand. You need to explain it to them in a way that they are going to understand it. Again, tell them, close your eyes. Go ahead. Drive your car. Go ahead.
This is going to be our last question.
All right. She has Thank one up you. Here. I'd like to give her a question, too.
You would?
Go ahead, please.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kirkland. This is very, very... I'm sorry, Dr. Richards.
That's me.
I gave you a whole new name.
Hey, I'll take it.
Okay, I'm sorry about that.
It's all good. Don't worry about it.
Okay, so I appreciate what you're sharing with us on today. This is giving so much hope to us. And one of the things that I want to ask, if I may, of you, I know this is about macular degeneration, but you mentioned about, you briefly hit it, but I caught it.
Okay.
When you were talking about the intravitreal injection for retinitis pigmentosa. Did I hear that correctly?
No, there's not really much there was one genetic expression that was determined through gene sequencing, and then they developed an actual medication called Luxturna. And that one Luxturna will actually reverse the effects of the RP for that patient. I think there's been 10 cases on the whole planet. That's how rare this one particular gene expression is. Can you hear me now?
Okay, yes, so sir.
Me, I have a question at the end, but I have congenital cataracts. I was born totally blind. I had my first surgery at 7 months old. Last month, I went to the eye doctor, and he was explaining to me that, like, usually after someone's born with congenital cataracts, it's important to do the surgeries within 2 weeks to get the brain to communicate with the eyes. And he says there are new research going on where they're getting the brain to start to communicate with the eyes. I was just wondering if you could explain that more. I'm wondering how that would be. I don't think it's something that would benefit me in my lifetime, but I'm very curious to how they would get the brain to start communicating with the eyes again.
Yeah, that one is a complicated conversation. When you have congenital cataracts and we take them out early in life, the eye hasn't grown to its full size. And so the surgeons are generally not going to implant that artificial lens, because then as the eye grows, you need to repeat and repeat and repeat the surgery. So that's when we do kind of very strong glasses, which I think you have very strong glasses. I can see them on your face. Right. Now, there are some lenses that they can implant in the front part of the eye, and potentially they could, you know, put lenses into your eyes and help you get some vision. But here's what's difficult. When there's cataracts and they're severe enough, or if we take the lenses out and you don't wear glasses or sustain wearing glasses, there's what's called amblyopia, or one of the forms of lazy eye. What lazy eye means to a doctor is not that it turns in or out or anything like that. That is one form of lazy eye. But for me, what a lazy eye means is that if the brain doesn't see the proper image, it will actually shut that eye down and it won't develop it all the way. it kind of says, well, I'm not going to waste my time, my energy, my efforts to developing an eye that doesn't see well. So it kind of shuts it down, and then you're left with one eye. If it happens in both eyes, then it does that to both eyes. So what I'm trying to say is that once that development period, it's usually by 11, 12 years old, if we haven't taken action by then, that kind of lazy eye or inability to focus very clearly is permanent. However, that doesn't mean that we can't augment the vision as much as possible. So I think perhaps, were there lenses put into your eyes at all? Yeah, so I mean...
stirred the cataract up, and then the last two, I was able to get vision up to 2200. It's getting worse now, but...
What is your level of vision at this stage?
About 2300, 2400.
And that's with your current glasses?
Yes.
Again, a difficult case. It looks like you have a little bit of misshaped pupil as well, which means, so things aren't perfectly aligned. But theoretically, right. So theoretically, they can implant a lens to put at least your glasses inside your eye so that you wouldn't have to wear glasses. But yet again, that's going to be an elective, you know, surgery. It's going to be expensive, and you're going to have to find a doctor that's willing to kind of mess with you.
It's a way of life for me to be able to see 20/20. I think that would be scary because I don't know. Would people expect more from me? Would I have to drive?
Well, no, the expectation would be that you would see kind of like you see with glasses. It wouldn't make it much better. It would just make it to kind of where you're at without having to wear these thicker, heavier glasses.
The brain can still communicate with the eyes even after a time, like, but maybe 12, you said?
Well, after 12, it just doesn't develop 100% proper. Again, you have 20/300, like this gentleman said. There's vision that goes from 20/20 all the way up to completely dark black, you know, so you're somewhere in between.
So one last thing, I did buy a pair of Meta glasses yesterday, but I don't know that my lens would they be able to fit them? I had such a hard time getting glasses now that will fit, to get the lens to fit in them. Would it work in the Meta glasses?
If you live close by, I will give you a card. Yeah, I'm here in Orlando, so you're reasonably close. I would love to check your prescription carefully, and I'll quote you a price. Just, it's going to be expensive. I got it. All right, Mama.
Check for questions on Zoom.
Yes. Any questions on Zoom? Anybody on Zoom want to ask any questions, please?
We do not have any hands on Zoom, sir.
Folks, I know we're running super late. Dr. Richardson was supposed to be back home with his kids already at this time, but he has really stayed. He's always a big draw. I promise you, we're in Orlando again in 28. Get ready. I want to thank you for coming out. Thank you for your knowledge. Thank you for your empathy. Thank you for just being yourself and always being ready to help us out. Folks, if we could give him a round of applause. And I know he likes to talk, so I'm going to let him end it with any final words of wisdom that he wants to share.
So if you're here and you want to join FCCLV, please reach out to Sally Benjamin. She is our treasurer. She'll be more than happy to take your money. And she'll also put you on the list so you can be a member.
The national organization Low Vision Alliance, which they recently changed their name, provide, it is a gateway. Our membership, obviously, we're local here in Florida, and we're obviously going to be your first point of contact. And we know that we just can't compete with the programming of a national organization. So what we've done is maintained our affiliation with Low Vision Alliance, and every member of FCCLV, so that $25 dues, will make you a member of Low Vision Alliance. That will also give you access to all of their programming, their independent listserv, all of their activities that they do, and they are very active. They are very active. I actually help them out. I do a lot of work with them at the national level. So it is a great bang for your buck, especially when it comes to some of that idle time. They do game nights. They do book, all kinds of things. A lot more things than then I'm prepared. They have support groups. And they're also at the national convention. They have their own programming. They are a special interest affiliate of the They do have a bingo that is very popular there with great prizes and a dance. It's fun. So we will get you that information, but let me let Dr. Richardson wrap up here.
Listen, that's 50 cents a week. You can handle that. All right? I lied. Listen, thank you again for the opportunity to come and meet with you. Again, people like yourselves are the ones that inspire me to do better work. I completely empathize with how difficult life is for you, and I will tell you that I will dedicate myself to help you and be able to be a, you know, someone that will fight on your behalf. So if you have any questions, I'm local here in Orlando. My office is called Eyes of Winter Park. The device that I invented is called SightStand. If you still have sufficient vision to kind of use your phone, the SightStand will transform it into a hands-free video magnifier. So it's a pretty neat device, and it's only $80. So if you're used to using a video magnifier like a Smart Lux or a Ruby or any of these kind of devices, my Smart Lux pretty much does the same, or my SightStand does the same thing, but only at $80 instead of the $850. So it's called SightStand, S-I-G-H-T Stand, and then again my office, Eyes of Winter Park. I will have business cards up here if anybody wants to grab one, and if anybody has any questions. Again, thank you for your time and for coming to speak to listen to me.
Thank you.
We have one more very important question, Dr. Richardson. What color would you describe your jacket as? It's fun. He looks like a bowl of sherbet, folks, is what I see. Right. I'm gonna call it sherbet green.
Yep. Green is my
favorite color. It is, right? Depending on where he's sitting, it changed color. And I was like, he has every color of sherbet on. It was green and yellow sometimes, but it's very sharp dresser, Mr. Richardson. Thank you for your time. Have a good one, everybody.